wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Morning, everybody. How are you today? Whew, what a lovely day it is. Thank you so much for being with us, and a big shout-out to the folks at Levingston's 94.7 for tuning in. An interesting topic today. Hopefully you'll spend the hour with us as we talk about the print media, what I have lovingly titled Past, Present, and Future of Printed Newspapers. Our guest today, McGregor McCance. McGregor, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being here with us.
It is a pleasure.
This program is being pre-recorded, so save your phone calls for a later time. But you can, as always, we will hopefully podcast this show, and you can go online to cvillepodcast.com and put your comments in the in that area. And I'll send all those thank yous and shout-outs to McGregor to his voicemail or to his email that I've been given. We'll think twice about that, won't we, McGregor?
Sounds good.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be here today. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, the summer heat is on, no doubt. Blue Ridge is fully stocked with a selection of kayaks and canoes for the perfect getaway. You'll find canoes by Mad River, plus all styles of kayaks from Wilderness Systems. Also at Blue Ridge, it's stand-up paddle boats for lake, river, or ocean. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville. You can find them on West Broad and the Chesterfield Town Center in Richmond. Online, it's brms.com. All right, McGregor, let's start with some simple stuff.
Good.
You are the managing editor at the Daily Progress.
That's right.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, that means that I am the manager responsible for the functioning of the news department at the newspaper. So I manage the newsroom, and I'm ultimately responsible and accountable for the content, photos, and articles and editorials that appear in the paper, which sometimes means I'm the chief complaint taker and the responder to the general public that has questions, comments, or complaints about the DP. And so I manage the news department, and we have managers similar to me in the chain that manage advertising, that manage the business office, circulation, et cetera.
Are you the guy who's responsible for profit?
No, I'm not directly responsible for profit. I would say advertising and circulation departments are the revenue generators in the newspaper business, but, of course, it's called a newspaper for a reason, and so we like to think that if we remain profitable, the news department had something to do with that by providing people something worth buying and reading.
So there's no slam on you if the circulation changes from this to that, or as the number of want ad pages drop from here to there.
Want ad pages, can't really speak to that. But, you know, if our circulation declines, and we have been on a declining trend, like just about every newspaper in the country, I take it personally as editor. I think what we do has a direct bearing on the popularity and success of the product. You know, how many people are selling it and reading it and reading it online. So, you know, when things go bad, I take it personally and think it's part of my job to try to get the thing better so we can sell more papers.
Well, it seems like that you would be feeling kind of bad these days then, because everybody knows that the circulation of the daily newspaper is dropping quickly.
That has definitely been the trend. And so to the extent that, you know, I'm the editor of a paper that is trying to get circulation heading in the right direction, sure. But you got to remember, too, the print paper is just one of our products right now. And, in fact, you know, the dailyprogress.com traffic and, as we call it more generally, our audience is growing very quickly. And we actually have more people reading our content right now than ever before when you take into consideration both the print paper and the website.
Really?
Correct, yeah.
What's the circulation? What has been the circulation? At some point, I doing my homework, 30,000 was at some point in 2008 or 2009.
That sounds about right. Yeah, when I got here 5 years ago, almost exactly, I think the circulation of the Sunday paper was right around 30,000, and the daily paper was a little bit less than that. And I think our Sunday circulation now is more like 28,000. Daily circulation is more like 25,000.
And is all that blame put on the newspaper industry as a whole?
What do you mean by blame?
Well, if I was told at where I work, if the number of people walking through the door had decreased by that amount, somebody is going to tell me something about how we need to change things, ask for my opinion, tell me what I need to do labor-wise, let me know that my job is up for being put in the hands of someone else.
Right. Well, you know, again, like I was, as I was talking about just a second ago, you have to consider both the print circulation, and we've talked about the decline there, but also the overall audience of people who are looking at our stuff in print and online and on mobile products, et cetera. And that number is actually a lot higher overall than it was 5 years ago. So the problem, though, as you know, is you can get millions of people to come to your site, read a story about the lacrosse killing at UVA, but those people are not paying customers right now. So it's part of that whole challenge in our business, trying to figure out how to transition what's been a spectacularly successful business model of print advertising and circulation and print copies of newspapers into one that combines the online success and the growing audience there with the print product and make it all something that can continue to be profitable, continue to be a growth product, and continue to put enough people in the chairs in the newsrooms to make it worth buying.
We are talking about print media, specifically the Charlottesville Daily Progress, with the managing editor of the newspaper, McGregor McCants. Let's talk a little bit about newspapers as a whole,
right,
and the industry, and then a little bit later we'll get specifics with the Daily Progress. Newspapers, decline in actual paying print newspaper customers.
Right.
Working on ways to overcome that, whether it's online, et cetera.
Right.
Do you feel that the battle is being won with, and as a whole, again, we're not talking about just the Daily Progress, but I assume that being with your role there, that you have at least regional, if not national, meetings where you talk about this, that this is the role of the future, is to go online and put your newspaper online?
I think that's the big question that just has to play itself out. I mean, we're in this big transition between traditional print-only, print-based products and some sort of hybrid that includes the online. And then, you know, some people believe that one day down the road there will be nothing but digital products. I don't happen to be one of those people. I think there will be a healthy mix of profitable print papers in some form, in some format, some kind of frequency of delivery, along with the websites that eventually I hope are going to generate a much larger percent of our revenue than they do right now. So, I mean, this is a topic of discussion that editors across the country have all the time, ceaselessly, and it's one that no one really has the right answer for. There's tons of experimentation being done at newspaper companies all across the country on charging for web access, for example, or developing other kinds of business models they hope are going to carry the day in the future.
And you battle with this because I would think that it's one thing to be the best in your area with a print product. Not everybody is going to deliver the Chicago Tribune to my house.
Right.
But I can go online and find what I think is the best online newspaper and subscribe to that.
Just get it for free.
Or make that my daily early morning coffee spot that I check.
That's correct. You know, I look at this from a lot of different angles depending on my mood of the day, I guess. And one of my more optimistic views is that it's remarkable that print papers have the circulation they have now, considering the explosion of competition and the explosion of information and entertainment options that people have. I mean, we could go home right now, flip on our cable TV, and watch nothing but shows about World War II history all day if we wanted to. You know, that option didn't exist a decade ago. You could go online and read about nothing but the Atlanta Braves all day if you wanted to. And that could take up the time that you might be reading a general circulation, general interest newspaper. So the competition, the amount of things that are out there for people and competing for their money and their time and their attention, to me is incredible. So on my really optimistic days, I look at the declining circulation of the Daily Progress and I think, pretty darn good we're doing as well as we are right now. And the future could be really good if we can make the online thing really work out.
Do you have specific newspapers that you sort of treat as your hero, your the model that you'd like to follow, both in, not necessarily in terms of print, but it, looking ahead to the future in terms of an online newspaper or what the particular newspaper is doing to keep their subscribers in whatever manner they're doing so?
Well, I really like what the Wall Street Journal is doing. I mean, aside from being the best news source for business and economic news anywhere, I think, they also have done quite a bit online to find a balance between providing a certain level of free information, but also having some really good in-depth, kind of enterprising, proprietary news and information that people have to subscribe to get access to. So, what they're doing is pretty neat, and I think it seems to be successful. That's one of the few newspapers in the country that really is registering gains in circulation. So, I really like what they're doing. Now, of course, Wall Street Journal has hundreds and hundreds of super talented, high quality, global expert journalists at its disposal. The Daily Progress doesn't have quite that level of staffing. So they're able to, to put out a big, vast array of products. A lot of it can be unique to the web, and you won't even find it in the print edition and vice versa. So that's really a great place for them to be able to be in.
What do you think about the blog? I mean, that's really, it's a Google term. I mean, years ago, Google was just something that your kids said, and now everyone knows what that refers to.
Yeah.
The blog, the blogosphere, blogging, is that a true competitor for you? As someone who manages the news department, newsworthy is that, or is that just more of an editorial page?
It just depends on what the blog is and who's doing the blogging. Yeah, I think blogs are legit. I think that that people running news-oriented Facebook pages and tweeting news-type content, all that's legit. I mean, to me, the whole question is credibility, and it depends on what you want. If you want credible news and a blogger has what you find to be fair, accurate, balanced, credible information, well, heck yeah, why wouldn't they be competition for a newspaper? They're providing the same kind of thing we are, and the key difference maker to me is it credible and believable? And if it is, they're competitors. If it's not, then they're competitors just for people's time and attention, if that makes sense.
It's perfect sense. We are talking with McGregor McCants. He's the managing editor at the Daily Progress. We're sort of talking about the past, present, and future of the printed media. This is a pre-recorded program. Thanks for listening. I'm out having a barbecue with my 90-year-old grandfather, who could probably tell us a lot about the newspaper industry.
I'm sure he could.
Should have invited him in. We talk about blogs. We talk about online newspapers. Twitter is something. And I saw that as someone who's out of sync, not Twittering at the time. The Daily Progress got a lot of thumbs up for using Twitter during the snowstorms.
Yeah, our online coordinator, Matt Rosenberg, really pushed hard to tweet regularly and to make timely tweets during the snowstorms about what was going on, conditions in certain parts of towns that we were hearing about. You know, even at one point tweeting, this hardware store has snow shovels. Hurry up, or this one doesn't, you know, or they're out everywhere. So, I think that, you know, Matt deserves a lot of credit for pushing ahead our tweeting and our Facebook efforts. And, those are just the latest tool that's out there. It's the latest thing. You know, blogging was the first thing or one of the first things. And now we have people tweeting and Facebook. And there'll be other things that come along, too. We can't even, you know, there'll be stuff that we have no idea about that's going to come out and also be perceived as a big threat to print newspapers. But to me, there's just potential other tools for us to try to get our information and content out there. The big key and the big question, how do we make money off of them? That's what we need to figure out. It's not my job to figure out how to make money off of them, but, you know, I sure hope that the experts in charge figure it out.
Well, we talk about tweeting. You talked about blogging and the reputation that goes with this. How does the reader, whatever format in which they're reading, are you stuck determining the value of this based on reading it for a month and then determining how many times they're right or wrong or how many times you agree or disagree? Because it used to be that, at least my understanding, is that there was Associated Press, there was UPI.
Yep.
And if the article that appeared in the Daily Progress had that link in front of it, you knew that it had value. Now, if it has some of our local writers, and again, there's Brandon.
Right. Brandon Shalita.
And there's Rich, and I can't remember her name.
Rashana Dixon. Rashana Dixon. The city
those are the two that I see the names of most frequently, and I may be leaving others out. But otherwise, it seems like it says in front of it from neighboring articles or some. There's some other phrase that's used if it comes from Richmond or Washington, D.C., or several other articles that were pulled together to write the one article. How does the reader determine the value and the clarity and the honesty of the article these days?
Well, again, I think it goes back to just the reader's perception through their past experience of the credibility of the product. Okay, if readers believe that the Daily Progress is a credible source of news and information, then when they see a story in there, regardless of the source from it, I hope that they will look at that and consider that editors at the paper decided that it was credible, accurate, and worth publishing in the newspaper. So those other things that come from different sources, Media General News Service is one of them that you might be thinking of, Bloomberg News Service, Washington Post News Service, Associated Press, these are all things that we subscribe to. And when they come from those sources and we put them in the paper, we stand by them. And so we hope that our readers will find that, you know, our editorial judgment is sound. And the only way they're going to figure that out, I think, is just by reading over time and deciding for themselves over time if we're credible and worthy of their time.
To me, reading the newspaper is a habit.
Yeah,
that's why you mentioned that you feel like that you've lost fewer subscribers against the trends that are out there than, and you said that you don't feel that the printed newspaper will ever disappear, or certainly not as quickly as many people seem to think.
Yeah, I mean, there were you know, analysts and observers saying 5 years ago, 2 years ago even, oh, that in 5 years, all print newspapers are going to be gone. Well, why would it be? I mean, these are fabulously successful, profitable companies. Why would they just disappear? I mean, and maybe in 2 years, all of our readers will be gone and we'll be gone and I'll look like a fool, okay? But I don't think that's going to happen. I think that print newspapers are going to evolve. They're not going to continue to look the way they do now. They may not have quite the same kinds of information. They may be completely different than they are 5 years from now. I happen to think there's a long-term demand for people who think that reading ink on a piece of paper is the easiest, most comfortable, most rewarding, sometimes their best habit, way of consuming information. I just believe that.
We are talking with McGregor McCants from The Daily Progress, and we're talking about newspapers. This is a pre-recorded program, and hopefully you're enjoying it. McGregor, we're talking about daily newspapers as a group, but what's it like in for many cities, two newspapers, the competing newspapers or the morning and evening newspaper have declined to just become one.
Right.
For whatever purpose.
I'd say most markets, virtually all of them.
And in this market,
right,
you compete with two weekly newspapers who compete with one another.
Right.
But I believe that there's one in Richmond. Other weekly newspapers sort of have the image of entertainment, style.
Right. Culture.
Culture.
Nightlife.
And I think that both of these, The Hook, which does underwrite on this program, have a greater image of news. And what's it like to compete against that?
It's tough. It's great, though. I agree with you completely. So many markets, you will have a small to medium-sized daily newspaper and then maybe one publication that might be considered similar to The Hook or Seville, or none. In some markets, there is absolutely no other competition floating around like that. And I'll tell you that I find this market to be the most competitive market I've worked in from a media standpoint. And I've worked in Richmond. I've worked in Roanoke. I've worked in Lynchburg, for example, Greenville, South Carolina. I think the competition here is more fierce than any of those markets. And the reason is because of The Hook and Seville and WINA and NBC 29, which I think stepped up its game quite a bit when the Newsplex opened up. So there's quite a bit of competition here. And, you know, it keeps a sense of urgency on us at the Daily Progress to try to get news into the paper and online faster. You can't sit on a story anymore because it's going to show up on one of these other competing websites or in their publication if you do.
This is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly to mostly cloudy with a chance of showers west of Richmond today. Highs 83 to 88. Partly cloudy tonight, lows 67 to 72. Then partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, highs 88 to 93, mid-80s in the valley. And now we're back with McGregor McCants, managing editor from the Daily Progress. We were talking about the competing newspapers in this town.
Yeah.
You've got two that we seem to agree are newspapers, even though they come out weekly. The emphasis, or at least a big chunk of it, they want to be seen for the news stories, not given the calendar of events for what's going on in town.
Mm-hmm.
But from reading all three newspapers, and with you managing the news department, still sometimes it seems like one of those newspapers has the in-depth story on some event first.
Right. Yep. It happens. I mean, you can't get around it. Okay. There's lots of news in Charlottesville. This is a very newsy town. And one of the big frustrations of editors, of me and other editors, reporters at the Progress, is we're limited in number, we're limited by time, and there are lots of really good stories out there. We pass by a lot of them every week that we wish we could have gotten to, but we simply can't. And then you run out of time on a daily basis, too. It's time to get the next paper to bed. It's time to get the next paper organized. But one thing that I think is worth pointing out about both of these very high-quality weekly news magazines is that they come out once a week. They do not have a sports section. They do not have an editorial section necessarily. They do not have a newspaper to publish every single day. And I think that, if the Daily Progress, for example, came out with just one once a week edition and we piled all of our best, hardest hitting stuff in one edition and we held it up against anyone else, it would be very favorable. But that's not to diminish what those guys do. I agree with you. They have some good news scoops. Sometimes we have to follow them up. Other times they have to follow us up.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like that's, regardless of what your workplace is, there's always the person across the street or the person, down the road who is competing against you. I don't know anybody mm-hmm. in any business that doesn't have competition. And as you said, you feel that that makes you better. But I would think that sometimes it just makes you grit your teeth.
Oh, sure. I mean, no editor around, no reporter around likes to see a competitor get a story before them. And no one enjoys it more than us when we get something that no one else has. So, you win some and you lose some.
Well, let's talk about the Daily Progress specifics and a little less about the competition. One of the things that has gotten a lot of attention, not just locally, but nationally, is attaching the news to an organization, Seaville Tomorrow. Tell everybody a little bit, because I think many people who read the paper or who read online might be familiar with the logo that tells mm-hmm. them that this is from this group, but not everybody knows what the group is
mm-hmm.
And then why you would sort of outsource, is because that's what many people think,
yeah,
that it's outsourced.
Interesting. People may choose outsource, but I think a more accurate term would be to complement or to bolster. First of all, let me get back to what you asked. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit, nonpartisan online journalism group that covers land use, transportation, local government type public affairs reporting. We've been in a partnership with them for about a year now, in which we use some of their articles in the print edition and online of Daily Progress and dailyprogress.com, and they get in return the wider distribution of their content. Now, why would we hook up with an organization like this? Whether it was them or someone else, it's a reflection of how hard this business is. It's a reflection of how difficult it has been to try to maintain quantity and quality of your content through economic recession. All right? It's a partnership that is designed, from our standpoint, to get credible, accurate information in the paper that we wouldn't otherwise have. And so we think it's worked out pretty well in that regard.
All right, thank you. We are talking with McGregor McCants. He's the managing editor from the Daily Progress. McGregor, we were talking about Seaville Tomorrow,
right,
and how things work with them. But how do you determine, I mean, you have two different groups. It's not the Daily Progress.
Mm-hmm.
Are they paid for anything that they do?
No, they're not. There's no money exchange that occurs between the Daily Progress and Charlottesville Tomorrow. Both sides feel that we each get something of value out of it. We get additional content and they get greater exposure for their writing. And I think what you were asking me about is, you know, how do we assess the credibility of the stories we get from Charlottesville Tomorrow? And we do that because, you know, we're editors at a newspaper, and that's part of our job is to read stories, read content, assess it for credibility, fact check it, and then sign off on it and put it in the paper if we're satisfied with it. So much of the early months of the information that we published under Charlottesville Tomorrow bylines was meeting-based reporting or document-based reporting, mostly meeting-based. For example, they would go to a planning commission meeting. They would write a story about Places 29 master plan, for example. They would record the meeting, and they would post the podcast on their site from the meeting. The stories would come to, let's just say me, for example. I would read the story, have questions, edit it normally as I would any staff-written story, get the questions addressed, publish the story. If a reader felt like that the information was inaccurate, they could always pull up the podcast, listen to the meeting themselves, and make their own conclusion about it. So that was the bulk of the reporting we got from them, was along those lines. More recently, we've had a little bit more enterprise-type reporting done by them. Once again, a lot of it is document-based, and it goes through the full normal vetting process before we put it in the newspaper.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to have this program today. Past, present, and future of newspapers, McGregor McCants, managing editor, Daily Progresses, is a show that we have recorded ahead of time. And let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. Mead Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgt-shirts.com. McGregor, talking about Seville Tomorrow contributing, but again, we go back to having faith and believing that those people can help because you don't have the number of people to do all the news that you would like.
Well, sure. Our staff is smaller than it was 5 years ago, and I'm not sure about before then. I got here 5 years ago. So as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, there's so much news that happens in Charlottesville that we see a lot of it go by the wayside each week that would have been nice to cover. I mean, consider that we have one person who is focusing on the University of Virginia, as big and as newsworthy as it is, who also focuses on other things. So that's in itself almost like a gigantic city or community that could deserve multiple reporters covering. But, you know, we have to keep our staff at levels that make sense for the business. But to get back to the question of Charlottesville Tomorrow, their content does supplement what we do. And in cases, it does, their coverage does include what we may have gone to previously when we had a few more reporters. For example, maybe a metropolitan planning organization level meeting or a planning commission level meeting that we may have gone to at one point. But now we mostly focus on the larger board of supervisors level coverage at in Albemarle County, for example. So to me, it's great to get that coverage from different various parts of the, you know, the government apparatus or the community and how it's working. And I think it's great that the people who run those meetings, the government officials, elected officials, know that someone that is representing a news organization or more than one in this case is there watching them. I think that's always a good thing and part of the role of what newspapers play in society.
But for many people, I think Brian Wheeler is someone who is from Seville Tomorrow.
Right.
Don't many people think that Brian Wheeler, Seville Tomorrow, is not necessarily telling the news in a middle way, but they all have some of the left way of doing their news, which makes it so it's not actually the way that the Daily Progress would do it?
I mean, we get criticized as being too liberal. We get criticized as being too conservative. All in the same day, about the same story. So once again, I think it goes back to how is the story reported? Is it accurate? Is it based on documents? Is it based on meeting coverage? Is it based on interviews, et cetera, et cetera? You are going to get criticized in the newspaper business no matter what you do, no matter what your sourcing is. It comes with the territory. It's worse now than it was 5 years ago. It's a lot worse than it was 10 years ago. When I go to bed at night, I don't lie awake thinking, oh my gosh, my personal biases are keeping me awake. I shouldn't be doing that at Daily Progress. I sleep just fine knowing that I think that I have done and we have done the best the best job we can to be faithful to our core mission of fair, accurate, balanced reporting. You're never going to satisfy all the critics. You have to listen to them. Even the most strident, personally belligerent caller or anonymous emailer or commenter often has something in their message that you ought to listen to that might make you change your behavior. But I am satisfied with the reporting that Brian Wheeler and his staff have done, and our reporters on the Progress staff as well.
We are talking about Charlottesville's Daily Progress, as well as sort of a national viewpoint, past, present, and future of the printed newspapers, because the Seville Tomorrow and the Daily Progress received sort of a national people looking to see how this works.
Yeah, there was some national attention given to the partnership by some of the trade publications and also by the Miller Center at UVA, which did, I think, a year-long study of the challenges of public affairs reporting in the newspaper and news media industry. And so, we were part of the study group there, and American Journalism Review's done some coverage of it, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the reasons I think that we've gotten attention is because for the longest time it was really kind of an unusual partnership that didn't exist in many other markets, if any. There certainly are other nonprofit journalism-related news organizations out there, a lot of them functioning independently. But I think there more of them now are beginning to form partnerships with newspapers and newspaper companies that I think are helping out both sides. I know there's a can't remember the name right now, but there's an organization in Chicago that covers Chicago news, and that news appears in the print edition of the New York Times that's distributed in Chicago. And the New York Times pays this organization for the content which appears in the paper. So there's another example of sort of a partnership among a traditional newspaper play and, you know, a more, I guess, more modern or more cutting-edge type of online play.
Let me jump away from something like that and go to a couple simple questions.
Okay.
Simple or not, but less deep. Daily Progress has had the same list of comics forever.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly as someone who reads
the
comics.
Come on, you don't love Beetle Bailey?
Whether I like Beetle or Bailey or not, he's been there the whole time.
Yeah.
But it seems that it's always been one page.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one or two that have changed in 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, and I don't think any of them have changed since I've been there. We've, I've kind of made motions or movements a couple of times to see about getting some new comics put in there. And a couple of times we've come close to shaking up the lineup a little bit. I remember one time specifically we were trying to see if we could get a regional buy that would get some new comics in our paper, in Waynesboro and in Lynchburg, for example. All of us are owned by Media General, and it didn't work out for whatever reason. But yeah, the comic, it's funny. I don't get complaints from readers saying your comics are old, stale, uninteresting, outdated.
Here you go. One.
Okay. I get one or two of them once in a while. I do get complaints if we screw them up and put the wrong one in under the wrong header, for example. And nothing brings the fire like putting the wrong crossword puzzle solutions in the paper. But comics, comics is one of those things right now that's kind of not on the front burner. But I know a lot of the younger reporters that we have in our staff, when they get the job there, they're always like, what, you still have Beetle Bailey and Hagar the Horrible? So they're accustomed to reading a lot more newer ones. So.
How would you make something new to happen? You said that you have nearly had some changes, but
right.
I mean, do we need to have everybody make a call or write a letter?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, send them to me.
Send them to you?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right.
I'd be happy to take them. But changing up our comic lineup is just one of those things that is on a list of 100 things. And right now, it's way down on the list. And we just have other things that we're concerned with right now. So, maybe we'll switch them up in the future. But I'd be happy to hear any suggestions or requests that anyone has about our comic strips.
All right. We are talking about the Daily Progress with Managing Editor McGregor McCants. Let's talk about One Ads. I realize that that's not the area that you oversee. That's not what you manage.
Right.
But is it the fact that there are fewer
mm-hmm.
pages, and the ones that you have, as someone in my business, we've had to put our help ads in a variety of different places, and the ones are still very expensive at the Daily Progress. The fewer pages you have, is that what makes the fewer news pages?
Not necessarily with the want ads. However, the size of the paper overall is largely determined by how many display ads are in there. You know, Belk ad, or you know, an ad for Barracks Road Shopping Center, whatever. The big ads that appear in the A section, in the sports section, etc. The size of those help wanted classified ads in the back of the paper, they're more like accordion like, and you know, the number of them doesn't really have a big bearing on the size of the paper overall. But I mean, you certainly noticed, and everyone else has, that there are fewer classified ads being sold. The whole industry, I think, years ago was caught flat-footed by Craigslist, for example. And the very effective, easy-to-use, free online classified option was just something that newspapers may have thought about doing at one point, but for whatever reason, they just didn't do it. And so Craigslist came in and really took a gigantic bite out of the bottom line of newspapers. And I think there was a day's stumbling about by newspaper companies on what to do about the loss in the classified ad revenue, which is a big part of the business. And then the economy came along, okay, and wrecked car sales and really knocked the bottom out of the real estate market. Also very big classified advertising components in revenue for newspapers. So now I think newspaper companies, including the one that I work for, Media General, have really been focusing on classifieds and trying to build that business back up, I think, by tying it more directly to our websites. To talk any more in detail about that would probably make me look really ignorant because I'm not involved in that. But I do know, you know, I do recognize that that's an area that really had suffered for newspapers, and it's one that that newspapers are trying to get back into the game a little bit more now.
Let's talk about trimming of costs.
Okay.
Because if you have less income from advertising,
right,
then anybody knows if you have fewer things purchased, then you have to trim the amount of money being spent.
Right.
How has that affected the Daily Progress? You still have some people whose names I've seen the whole time. Mm-hmm. Jerry Ratcliffe is still in there.
Yes.
David Maurer is still in there.
Yes.
I don't think that's the proper pronunciation.
Maurer.
David Maurer. The woman who used to do the food, Hilda Lee?
Hilda Lee? Yeah, she is not a full-time employee. She is a contributing columnist who gets paid as a contractor to submit that weekly food column. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
No,
I was just going to, you know, address the issue of, from a business standpoint, what has been the effect? How has all this played out for the Daily Progress? And I'm going to start by saying all businesses suffered through this recession. And I think most every business that I know of or read about has made its way through the recession to continue on primarily by controlling costs and cutting expenses, not by growing revenue and not by adding new products necessarily. That has been really hard on all kinds of companies, including newspaper companies. And the various ways that newspaper companies, including the Progress, have responded to try to control costs, there are a lot of them. Let me give you a couple of examples specific to the Progress, but really they're ones that almost every newspaper has done. Attrition. Positions will come open and they will not be filled for quite some time. That saves costs. Using less newsprint, in other words, printing fewer pages in the daily paper, saves newsprint costs, which is a very big cost for companies.
Describe what happens there. Give me an example of what that is.
Oh, sure. The newspaper, let's say the A section is 10 pages, okay? Instead, we cut it back to 8 pages. And if you do that, and this is just a general example, this is not exactly what we've done, but if you decide we're cutting out 4 pages out of the paper every week, and you put that across an entire week, and then you assign how much you've saved in paper costs of the actual paper, then that adds up to some significant savings across an entire company like Media General. So you have personnel costs that you're controlling or cutting. You have paper costs. You also control expenses of things like travel, subscriptions, those kinds of things. Consolidation has been huge in the newspaper business. I remember the last night, the last Daily Progress printed in Charlottesville came off the press in our Daily Progress building over at Rio Road. It's now printed in Hanover County at the Richmond Times-Dispatch printing press plant. That was painful, but it saves a lot of money. It allows us to have color on vastly more pages than we had before, and the resolution of the print quality paper was greatly improved. So there's give and take in that too, but you know, people lost their jobs in that, and that saved money too. So there was in all these things, there's the tragic side of people's lives being affected. A lot of newspaper companies instituted furlough days of people. You know what that is, days off without pay. And we had our share of them last year. We haven't had any this year so far. And I don't think that there's any indication that we're going to have more. But that happened. This company, like other companies in our business and elsewhere, pulled back on the 401k. So employees are not getting a matching company contribution to the 401k temporarily until it's reinstated. Lots of companies across industries push that button to save money too.
Is there anything that you feel like the Daily Progress leads the way, either nationally, and I'm not talking about the Seaville tomorrow. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
I think many people would say that's certainly something that this leads the way in that. But city-wise, mm-hmm. state, mm-hmm. regionally, is there anything that you feel that the Daily Progress leads the way for?
Well, let me start with our sports department. I think we have one of the finest sports departments of small papers and bigger papers anywhere in Virginia. And I think that, you know, when we get fired up about covering big event news, sporting event at UVA, for example, we do a great job at it. I'll give you a recent example. We sent Whitey Reed, our basketball beat reporter, and Jerry Ratcliffe, our sports editor you just mentioned, we sent him across the country a few weeks ago to interview Tony Bennett's first class of recruits at UVA's basketball. And we did this because we wanted to talk to these kids and their parents in their setting before they got here. And we wanted to do it without being a press release from UVA. We wanted to give people an inside look at who these people are, what makes them tick. And it's also a very important class for Bennett. It's his first class at UVA basketball. So, you know, that's something that you couldn't read anywhere else in the entire country. No one was doing that except the Daily Progress with these kids. And I really think not many papers are doing that at all right now. In our news department, I think that we do a very reputable, solid job of covering these local governments and the issues that come before them. And I'm proud of that. Even as our staff has gotten smaller, we have dedicated reporters. You mentioned a couple of them earlier, who the longer they're with us, the more expert they get in Albemarle County government or Charlottesville City government and the issues around them, for example. And I think that, you know, we are still doing the best job in the market of being the paper of record for what's going on in Charlottesville, particularly with local government.
McGregor McCants is here with us. He is the managing editor from the Charlottesville Daily Progress. Again, SeavillePodcast.com. If you have questions or comments, send your information there. This is a pre-recorded program.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Let's see, Roger Ebert tells you whether or not to spend your money on this week's summer movie. The Dish shares especially tasty news, tips, and gossip regarding local restaurants, chefs, and farms. And the calendar for art, music, and other fun can be found all in one place. The Hook, fast, friendly, and free. That's right. And even though The Hook is there today, the Daily Progress is with us today. McGregor McCants here. Let me also give a shout out to Sugar Snap. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including shoes and hats, plus maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find cloth diapers, diaper bags, and locally made items. They have a kid-friendly play area that is available while you shop. You can be a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter, and you can also find the store at 480 Shoppers World. And, you know, we also want to take a moment and thank listeners like Donna Rigby, Nathan Fountain, and John Herman for contributing to WNRN, the fun drive in the spring. It's because of people like those that you have the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call and the air every Sunday. And it's also because of program underwriters like ACAC and the Flathouse. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about us on Sundays and other programming you enjoy on NRN. Also, be aware, upcoming food fun drive in September. Tune on WNRN.org. Just a little bit of time left with McGregor McCants. Let's talk a little bit about big stories that have happened in 2010 and what that's like.
Okay.
Certainly, I guess one of the ones you mentioned very early was about the yearly love.
Right.
What happens? I mean, because I would think that that has everyone, not because it's specifically pleasant story,
right,
that would have almost everyone working for the Daily Progress rushing and racing to get everything, every bit of news that you can.
That is so true. And, you know, it used to be before newspaper websites were playing the role that they're playing now, you would have all these people scrambling around trying to chase down documents, sourcing, photo, etc., to get this story ready for the next morning's paper. So everyone was working furiously toward one big deadline at the end of the night, and then you put the paper to bed and there you go. You know, those days are gone. So that story was a great example of how people are running constantly for a constant deadline. It's just whenever you get new information in a story that big and that competitive and that intense, you have to get it on the web and pushed out through those other platforms you talked about, Twitter, social media, etc. You got to get that stuff out as quickly as you can, but also make sure that you got it right, because you know, it's nothing worse than being first but being wrong. Then you're worse than worthless, I think. But so that's exactly what, you know, that whole first week was like in chasing down different things that happened in that story. It was really incredible. And it was amazing how the national media came in, swooped in, and put its spin on things. And, you know, you and I had talked before coming in here about how national media they're not accountable to people in Charlottesville. So when they fly in and, you know, do a story, they can put whatever kind of face on it, or they can spin it any way they want to. They could misquote people and it wouldn't matter. I mean, it would matter to people here, but, you know, are we going to call the Today Show, for example? Not that they did anything wrong, but, you know, someone from Charlottesville is going to call them and say, oh, I want a correction. You know, you misquoted me when you came to Charlottesville for the Yardley Love story. So that was quite a big story, as everybody knows. And, you know, coincidentally, it was we set records for page views and for unique visitors at dailyprogress.com. One particular day in there, I think it might have been the day that the first warrants came out, and for that entire week. So it was quite the news story.
Well, you talk about warrants. Talk a little bit about the Daily Progress as one of the three or four print newspapers that went to the judge trying to get more information released. Tell me about that. Why would you have to, and the time that it took to make it happen, and what ended up happening?
All right, well, I'll try to summarize it quickly, but essentially what happened early on was some of the search warrant affidavits and search warrant returns on Yardley Love's apartment and George Hughley were public, as they typically are. These kinds of documents are public in the circuit court or general district court clerk's office. So, you know, we go to look for them, we get them, we have them, so does everyone else. And then we're waiting for a new set to come out. And suddenly we learn the documents are no longer available. They've been sealed by a judge. Well, then the next step is, could we please see the sealing order? And that is the document that lays out these documents, you know, this person or this organization, the Commonwealth Attorney's Office maybe, requested we seal these documents in this case. I hereby seal them, whatever it might say. What we learned was even that document was sealed. So not only could we not get the documents, which normally are available and generally considered public, we couldn't get the reason for it. That was sealed too. And so, you know, we tried to get the information. We tried to convince them to unseal it. It wouldn't happen. And so we quickly decided it's probably going to take a legal challenge to get a court to consider opening up these documents. So the Daily Progress, the Times-Dispatch, Washington Post, and Associated Press all kind of combined forces. That is, we all chipped in money to hire a lawyer and have that person or have the law firm file the right stuff and get the hearings to try to get the documents open.
Took weeks.
Yeah, it took a long time. There were big delays or, you know, gaps between when a request would be filed and when a hearing would be scheduled. And then there was a delay between when the hearing was scheduled and when a decision was announced. And then we would appeal that and take it on and on. So it took quite a while. Ultimately, a judge was you know, seated in this thing, who was not the original judge. The first judge decided that there was a potential conflict of interest, so she kind of pulled out of it. And the substitute judge came in. We had the big hearing before him, all these people testifying, and he decided that most of the documents would be unsealed and available, with some stuff redacted, like Social Security numbers and maybe some witness names, for example. So we finally got them. There was nothing earth-shattering in them. I mean, there was not some great new revelation about the case or what the evidence was that the police had.
So what was the purpose?
Well, I think the purpose was more on the principle of the media outlets believe that the documents should be public and should be open to the public, and that is a kind of a core foundational principle of our court system. If someone gets accused, the community deserves a right to see the evidence that is brought against them, so that they can make a judgment for themselves about whether, you know, the person's getting a fair trial or has a fair case.
You have both the city of Charlottesville, Albemarle County, and with this particular article, you have the University of Virginia. How did the University of Virginia work with you on this? Or did they just say, hands up, over here, sorry that the one young woman was hurt? Because they did a lot of memorable things,
yeah,
especially with
yeah
the end of May, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But the young man, they seem to have pushed aside and said, don't really know him, not sure why he would do that. Does the university treat you well when you say nice things about them and treat you poorly when you say something that they don't care to hear about?
No, I think that UVA has been pretty consistent in how they interact with us. And I'd like to think that they and other institutions in town feel the same way, that, you know, we try to give people a fair shake. We don't back off when we think there is something that we need to report. You know, sometimes you ruffle feathers, no problem. That's part of journalism. And sometimes you do things that make them unhappy, and that's the way it goes. But I think, you know, in the end, they understand if we're being fair about the thing, and, you know, we're getting our facts straight, then they, you know, they've been around the block plenty of times, and they're the focus of media attention internationally. And I've never experienced any kind of, you know, implied or real negative reaction of, you know, we're going to get you back for some story you did at all.
And the city of Charlottesville, the police department, we were talking a little while ago about how, I guess within the last 2 years anyway, there was one incident where a police officer made a turn and hit a gentleman in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one just in the last several months,
mm-hmm,
where a gentleman in the public works, I guess driving the dump truck, made a turn and hit someone on a bike. What kind of feedback do you get from the city or the county for those instances,
mm-hmm,
especially in such an incident where you could write anything you want. If you don't write bicyclist hits dump truck, anything else that you might hit, it always sounds like the guy driving this dump truck did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And because my theory is always that there's the one paragraph people. You read the headline, you read the first paragraph,
right,
and then you move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be very careful about how you word it. And I would think that as a member of the police department worried about how that came out with the gentleman in the wheelchair,
mm-hmm,
the city of Charlottesville, and the dump truck public works gentleman,
yeah,
do they come after you? Do they raise your hands and beg you not to write anything about it?
No, not at all. I mean, I also, again, in my time here, I can't remember a time when there was any of that kind of pressure applied to us. Please don't do this, or you better not do this, or you're going to be sorry, or anything like that. You know, we've gotten some things wrong, and you'll hear from the government folks when you do that. And when you do that and they're right, then you got to correct it and move on. But it's not always easy to get information, as anybody in the newspaper or media business will tell you. People in general, I think in general, they, you know, they don't want negative things written about them, so that puts people on a defensive to begin with. But you know, we have not ever gotten any kind of pushback from the police department in either jurisdiction that I can think of because of something we had reported.
Just a few minutes left here as we finish up our Sunday with McGregor McCants, managing editor of the Daily Progress. As we mentioned almost at the start of the hour, it's a lot different, though, for the Daily Progress to be writing these sorts of articles because everybody knows each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you only have, because of financial situations, mm-hmm, you only have a few journalists writing the articles. And it seems like that if that has to be, if the story is difficult or negative,
mm-hmm,
and it has that sort of painful aspect to it, how does that person do that? And how does the Daily Progress sort of separate the community aspect, mm-hmm, from the journalistic aspect?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the newspaper reporters at the Progress are there to do a job, and that is to report what we feel like is newsworthy to the readers. And we serve the readers. We don't serve the sources that provide us information. We don't serve the University of Virginia. We don't serve the Charlottesville Police Department. You know, we serve the people who subscribe to the newspaper. And I think it's just important to keep in mind that those are the people that you're working for. Those are the people that you, if you're going to try to make anybody satisfied and happy, those are the ones that you do. You don't write stories to try to make the mayor or the, you know, the county manager happy. You know, you have some that, that'll be featurey, and you have some that are going to be hard-edged. But it's a small town, and people do see each other all the time. And if Rashana Dixit writes a story that, that is critical or uncovers information that, you know, the city council would rather not see in the public eye, she'll be at the next meeting, and they will be too, and they'll have to interact again. And to, you know, to me, one way to get around this and the thing to do is to be fair with people, to be civil with people, not to be, you know, just attacking and screaming at people, but to understand that, that all these different sides have a story to tell, and it's our job to try to get them all in there.
This is WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Last few moments of Charlottesville's Daily Progress. Editor McGregor McCants. And this is a pre-recorded program. Drew Thompson will be here in just a moment for Les Temps Perdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. And we think he'll play some stuff like Sinead O'Connor and Aztec Camera, Beastie Boys. And this is all brought to you in part by Orzo and the Visual Light Theater.
Aztec Camera.
Yeah. When was the last time you heard that?
Probably when I was in 10th grade or so. Oblivious.
Real quick, what is the most difficult aspect news-wise of doing what you do? I mean, or let me rephrase that. What has been the most difficult story for you to provide news coverage for?
I mean, that's hard to say. It's things like the Yardley Love case can be difficult, and we've had stories about, you know, people getting in trouble with the law and then getting bad reaction from family members or whatever, and it can be difficult sometimes. You know, I've gotten calls from parents who we're furious that we covered the death of a child or something, and, you know, think that that's not our mission. And that's always a difficult thing personally when that happens, because you feel for them, but you also know that you need to report what happens. You know, overall, the hardest thing right now in newspapers for a person like me, I think, and an editor in another town might have a different opinion, but the hardest thing is just trying to be consistent. It's trying to be good on a consistent basis. You can be really good one day, but if you're really horrible the next day, that's going to be what a lot of people take away from it. So the challenge for me is trying to make us reliable and consistent and occasionally very, very good on a consistent basis. Really hard to do.
Thank you so much, McGregor. I appreciate you coming in.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Now I have my ends at the Daily Progress, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Drew Thompson's up next. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.